Hi, this is Barry Liss at Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. How do companies set prices? Making the right pricing choice can be a life or death decision for a business. In today's segment, we talk to Dr. E. Andrew Boyd, author of The Future of Pricing, How Airline Ticket Pricing Has Inspired a Revolution. Dr. Boyd is a regular contributor to the public program Engines of Our Ingenuity, which is produced by KUHF-FM in Houston. Dr. Boyd is affiliated with the University of Houston. He joins us today to talk about a scientific approach, not only to pricing, but to other issues that face airlines and business today. Dr. Boyd, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you, Barry.
For starters, let's talk about airline reservations. Nowadays, it's easy to schedule yourself online at any airline website, and if your flight arrives late, you can go to a computer at the airport and reschedule without having to wait for the airline attendant to help you out. Take us back to the days when 3x5 cards ruled. Tell us a little bit about the history of airline reservations.
Well, you know, it's a fascinating history, and to start with, you know, 3x5 cards were already a major technological leap in airline reservations. Originally, the reservations were kept in books, ledgers that were actually up on shelves. So reservations agents would take the books down, open to the right page, write in a name and information about a passenger, and they keep it all in those books. And interestingly enough, that would require things like erasing and locating things within books. 3x5 cards actually separated things out so that you could move them around fairly easily. And so the 3x5 card was already a great breakthrough.
And where do gumball machines fit into this history?
Well, gumball machines actually were used, things similar to gumball machines, so that reservations agents could actually look up on a wall and see how many seats were left on a particular flight. So if there were gumballs left, those would correspond to seats that were still left in the flight. And if they booked something on that flight, they'd push a little button that would cause a gumball to drop out a trap door in the bottom, and that way they could keep a record of the number of seats.
We tend to chuckle about ways like that seem antediluvian now, but in fact, as you were saying before, this was moving the process along, and you have to have all the steps before you can get to a system like we have today.
Absolutely. The airline industry started well before the advent of computers, because, of course, the thing we think about now is, why didn't you just use a computer? And that's because there were no computers. And so, in fact, the airline industry worked very early on with IBM and other computer manufacturers to do some of the very first computer systems. In fact, computer reservation systems were some of the first major business computer systems that were used. So it pushed forward. And it was obvious that it had to happen, because if we think about it, you know, just a single flight, even back at the in the 1940s, you know, it could have 30 or 40 passengers. But it's not just one flight. You have a collection of flights, and they interconnect with things. Plus, you're taking bookings on flights weeks or months in advance. So you easily can be running up, even with the small airlines back then, you could easily be running up to 10, 15, 20,000 seats that you'd be managing at any given time. And that's a fairly big number to be handling with, even with 3x5 cards.
And the reservation system folds in with seat pricing, since nowadays they're done together. Once again, let's look at an earlier period, the 70s, 80s, and before. How did airlines set prices then?
Right. Well, deregulation took place in 1978, and it's interesting because that was over 30 years ago. Those of us who've been around long enough don't feel like it was that long ago, but it's been over 30 years since deregulation has taken place. Prior to that, airlines didn't set prices. They were set by the U.S. government, and they were all uniform, and the process of changing a price required sending a letter into the U.S. government and all sorts of bureaucratic work. And in 1978, that basically went away.
So I'm assuming that deregulation substantially changed the entire way that pricing was done.
Oh, absolutely, especially if you talk to folks that worked in the industry back at that time. Not only did they not have to worry about pricing up until the industry was deregulated because the prices were just set. But once the deregulation took place, which was fairly quickly, they were lost. They hadn't been doing it for years, so all of a sudden, no pricing to what in the hell do we do was what many people would say to me.
And what were the initial things that were done?
Well, again, the first thing is just running around. I think the automation of the pricing, continuing with the reservation systems and having people that could just literally physically put prices in and change them, was the mechanics was already an issue. Interestingly, I don't think that they did anything. I don't think anybody did anything particularly good in pricing immediately after deregulation.
And was this the point when they began thinking along the lines of different categories like business class or leisure or even discounts?
Actually, the difference between business and leisure passengers started much earlier. And in fact, that distinction, in fact, one person that I interviewed pointed out that the whole airline industry really revolved around that distinction. So that didn't really come out of the deregulation. They'd always been thinking about that, but then once they came out of regulation into deregulation, the question was, how do you price and segregate the market differently so that you can sell to the two different classes of passengers?
So that was the basic way of doing it, and then, of course, you had your competition, which forced pricing.
Yes, absolutely.
Moving ahead a step or two, in your book, you look at the debt hanging over one of the legacy air carriers, and you write that selling one seat in every flight for an additional, say, $400 or $500 would wipe out the debt. How did you come to frame the question that way?
Well, it's interesting. You mean as opposed to just raising all prices by $10?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is that is actually the way a lot of people in the airline industry think about how do you improve profitability. Certainly within, and I assume we'll talk about this shortly, within what are called revenue management departments. It's not so much about thinking about raising prices a little bit, but if there's a business traveler out there that's willing to pay $600, you don't want them to be able to get it for $150, but you'd like, if his willingness to pay is $600, you'd like to capture that. So that drives a lot of the airline pricing, is how do you capture what someone's actual willingness to pay is.
In the 1980s and 90s, operations researchers began using the technique you just mentioned, revenue management, as well as optimization and other techniques to set prices. How did this come about?
Here again, this is interesting, and within airlines, pricing and revenue management are two different things. They're actually have separate pricing and revenue management departments. And if you'll let me back up for just a 60-second explanation, in a lot of companies, a lot of businesses, this isn't quite as important, but in the airline industry, what the pricing departments do is they set the prices of the different products. So you might have a business class ticket, which might be called a Y-class ticket. And the pricing department would say from Houston to New York, that's going to be a $600 fare. But they may set fares, they may have different. So you may also have a leisure class fare, maybe called a Q fare. And that might sell for $150 in the same market. So the pricing departments figure out what are the prices for those two different products, the Y-class and the Q-class product. What revenue management departments do is they figure out how many of each of those products are we going to allow ourselves to sell. So, for example, on a 100-seat aircraft, you could say that we're only going to allow ourselves to sell up to 80 of the leisure class tickets, and we'll hold back 20 of the business class tickets for the later arriving business class passengers. So pricing departments fix the prices of similar products between different airlines. The revenue managed departments actually say how many of those different products are we going to allow ourselves to sell. One little additional caveat that's quite interesting here is the prices that we see as consumers, are the changes are typically coming not from pricing departments, but from revenue management departments. When I look and today and see that I can get from Houston to New York for $150, and then I get back on my favorite website and find out that tomorrow it's $600, that usually happened because the revenue management department said, we're not going to sell any more $150 tickets. So what we typically see as price changes come not from pricing departments, but actually from revenue management departments.
And this is, of course, from the perspective of the business person. We may look at consumers and how they approach this another time. Another technique used is optimization. Can you explain that, what it is and how it's used by the airlines in this area?
Yeah, and specifically, and again, this it's good to have the little background on revenue management. The revenue management department say how many of business passengers do we expect to see, how many leisure passengers do we expect to see, and therefore, how many tickets should we limit ourselves to selling to leisure fare passengers. So that number of 80, we aren't going to sell any more than 80 tickets to leisure passengers and save 20 on our 100-seat flight for business passengers, is where the optimization comes from. And that comes from forecasting future demand, looking at the entire network of flights, not just an individual flight, and then using a lot of mathematics to come up with what that number should be.
And was this the revolution of the 1980s and 1990s, the introduction of these two techniques?
Yes, very much so.
And how has pricing changed since the start of using these two techniques in airline pricing?
Well, the technique, when it was pioneered primarily by American Airlines, which led the way on a lot of this stuff for many years, it just changed the industry. Airlines found that if they didn't use these techniques, they really couldn't remain profitable, and they became part of the entire underlying fabric of the airlines. So they all use this now, and it's typically quite sophisticated.
And how do you balance what customers are willing to pay for an airline seat or a hotel room and what a company would like to charge for that product?
Well, you don't really balance it. Basically, the goal is that you're trying to find out what customers are willing to pay and how to segregate them and actually charge them the amount that they're actually willing to pay. Of course, when I say segregation, the primary means of segregation is just time before departure. That's why you typically see the flights go up in price early, close to departure.
You did an interesting radio segment called The Just Price, in which you discussed the history of setting a value on a product. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of coming up with a just price?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I won't, but I could talk to you for hours about this. Of course, kind of in the wake of Adam Smith, we typically view prices in the marketplace as not a moral or ethical question, although there are certainly clearly ways that people can step over the line, charging a vast amount of money for something during an earthquake or a disaster of some sort is certainly ethically questionable. But the whole notion of price and the ethics of pricing dates back to Aristotle, actually in his work, The Ethics. Isn't it a horribly long work? A fair amount of that is actually devoted to the concept of a just price. And so throughout history, especially through philosophers and church scholars, have dealt with this issue of just pricing. What is an acceptable, what is a fair price? And so there's a long history on that, and it's partly because the whole concept of pricing used to be viewed as ethical as much as just what takes place. And secondly, I think it goes more basically to our fundamental notions of fairness in pricing. We clearly have some sense of what's a fair price and what's not. And when we're charged a price that's not fair or that we deem is unfair, we can become very, very angry about that. So the whole notion of justice in pricing is very interesting historically and also very relevant practically, because people that step on notions of fairness in pricing can jeopardize their businesses.
And since we bring up just price, you feel that the airlines have arrived at a way of setting just prices, more or less?
I think most people would say we're used to it enough that it doesn't bother us as much as it used to. But it used to cause a lot of consternation. A lot of people, it still does. And I think, as we've all felt, we've all had at least some emotional experience when we're buying a ticket. Not always bad. If you find a great deal, you feel good about that.
Right.
But if you call back a day late and the price has popped up by $100, you feel bad about it. But I think increasingly we've at least gotten used to it, even if we're not entirely happy with it.
We've discussed how revenue management has been used by the airlines. What are some of the extended applications that you've used in RM, as it's called, be it in the hospitality industry or natural gas piping or other products?
Yes, I actually led the science group within industry for a company that did this for many years. I've had a chance to work with many hotels, with the gaming industry, with package shipping companies, with theme parks. Pricing is, as people like to say, it changing a price is far less expensive than dealing with trying to drive down costs. So if you can just price effectively, there's a huge potential benefit to businesses. So there's a growing awareness of the importance of trying to do something more than pulling a number out of the air.
Can you review some of the changes in pricing that are taking place today, whether in the airlines or among other products?
Yeah, I think at a minimum, the airlines went through this mechanization and kind of going from seat of the pants to doing things analytically, intelligently. There's still a vast, I was surprised at the vast amount of pricing that still takes place by people fundamentally pulling a number out of the sky. And when you stop to think about it, it's a hard question. It's a really hard question. So the big changes that you're seeing right now are really just a lot of early adoption saying, boy, we've got all these numbers on sales figures. Can we do something with it, anything with it, to make better pricing decisions than we are now? And I think the companies that will do well or even survive going into the next few decades will be the ones that take it seriously.
We only have time for a couple more questions. In a recent column in the online magazine Analytics, you asked, analytics is all about the numbers, or is it? What's the people side of everything we've been talking about today?
Again, from an analytics perspective, this is another one that I could talk about for hours about, but, saying that you have wonderful mathematics and wonderful numbers is very different than having people accept those numbers, because sometimes, and quite frequently, analytics generates numbers that aren't immediately intuitive, especially to people that have been doing business in a particular way for years and years. And analytics professionals, everyone involved has to realize that there has to be this process of making sure that everyone understands the numbers, where they came from, and what's going to happen. And that it's not that analytics isn't magic. It's this fantastic tool that can do so much for companies. But it requires not just cranking out numbers on a professional standpoint, but being able to make sure that everyone accepts and embraces these numbers. And I'd say from the many different projects that I was involved in, that was always the single most challenging aspect of the project.
So people have to develop communications abilities and powers of persuasion if they're going to be successful in analytics or operations research.
I think you stated that very well.
Final question. In your radio series, you did an entire segment about a book by Levinson called The Box. What box did he write about, and how has it changed a different form of transportation carrying products by ship?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. That is such a wonderful book, and the reason is it's about container shipping boxes, these boxes that we see on ships, on trains going by, and the realization that even half a century ago, a little over half a century ago, we didn't use them. And instead, most of the shipping was break bulk, where you'd take stuff individually and put it into boxcars, out of boxcars, on ships, out of ships. And when we shifted to this very lovely and very simple thing called shipping containers, it completely reshaped the industry. Not just the industry, but the efficiencies involved in using shipping containers are so great that they changed basically the way manufacturers manufacture, retailers retail, where companies locate their businesses. It just, nothing that simple, as far as I know, has had such a huge impact on world commerce. And the beauty of it is that it's just so simple. I like to think of the boxes as kind of the equivalent of the bits and bytes of computers. The boxes are now kind of the bits and bytes of our international transportation system.
Well, that's an interesting comparison, especially when you consider that one is so tiny or virtual and the other is physical.
Yep, and one's kind of a conceptual domain and one's a very, very physical domain.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Dr. E. Andrew Boyd, author of The Future of Pricing. Dr. Boyd, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Barry. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and this series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.